Good.
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 Oh.
Big.
Big.
Make it bigger. This is what I get a lot used to back in the day with logos and stuff.
Yeah.
When you're designing, the client's like, make it bigger. Make it bigger.
Make it bigger. Well, also, I feel...
I would make it so big, they'd be like, can you make it smaller? And I'm like, yep.
Sure. Fainier? You also...
You want it with more girth, or... Hey, we're back. It is the 6 a.m. podcast. This is episode 1 of season 3.
Yeah.
Because why not?
It's been almost a goddamn year, Jeff.
It's been a year. Yeah. And boy, has it been a year, Pat. Let me tell you.
You said the other day, you said, I don't know, somebody mentioned at the gym, they were like, oh, how long has it been since you guys put out a podcast?
And I was like, a couple months.
Yeah, you said a couple months. And I was like, I'm not here to call you wrong, Jeff, but you're fucking wrong.
You're wrong.
You're way wrong.
In fact, I was so wrong that it was like, it was a year.
Yeah.
It was almost a year to the day.
Yeah. So, I mean, but really, you really didn't do much in that time, right?
No, I slept a lot.
Yeah. I figured you caught up on a lot of sleep.
I'd read a lot of books.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I took a lot of baths.
Really?
Yeah.
You a bath guy?
Yeah. I love the bath.
Ice bath?
I don't bath at all.
You don't bath?
No, I shower.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a bath guy.
Well, I'm happy to hear that you at least showered during this time.
Like twice.
Yeah. The shower actually plays into this.
Once when I kicked it off and once before I came back.
You know, just for good measure. That's a good bookend.
That's right. Yeah.
Yep. But entire time, I don't think, aside from the past couple months, and I wouldn't even say that's like you haven't worked on the new gym since then, but you have been working on opening a goddamn jiu-jitsu gym.
And here we are, kids. That's right.
Which initially was supposed to be a couple months. And I think that's why you had the mistake. Because when we originally were taking a hiatus was when you said, hey, man, let's just take a little break until the gym gets open. Should be a couple months or a few months, I think.
Yeah, a few months.
Brogan thinks it's going to be a couple months. I think it's going to be a few months.
I will say that I did I was not as optimistic as some of my partners in this that when it was going to get done. But it's exactly what happened. We had found a space, guys. Look, this episode is just going to get everybody caught up on where we were. We're excited to be back. Excited to have you guys back to listening to it. We're going to be talking a lot about jiu-jitsu because it's a jiu-jitsu podcast.
Yeah.
And the format's going to stay the same. We're going to talk about jiu-jitsu. We're going to talk about what's happening in the world of jiu-jitsu. What's happening with us in jiu-jitsu, and then we'll talk about what we're listening to on the turntable.
Oh, yeah.
Ask a black belt's back, and then that's what we're gonna do. But today we're gonna get you all caught up on where the hell have we been.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part, I mean, if a podcast like ours drops off the face of the earth, everyone's like, meh, all right, well, I guess I'll go listen to something else, right?
Legitimately, it's been a year
of
people going, when's the podcast coming back?
Right.
When are you guys doing the podcast again?
Right. And you know what, and it was
good.
It was one of those unfortunate situations in which I couldn't tell when that was going to happen. I am a partner in our new gym, which is Harrisburg Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Judo East. It's on the east shore of Harrisburg in Pennsylvania. And our west shore location was at capacity for students. And we had this opportunity where we were going to start looking at gyms and looking at new spaces to help alleviate, not only to cater to people on the east shore, because I don't know, like, for our listeners, we have some that are, like, across the pond. We have some that are across the United States. And most of them live here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And there's this weird thing where we have a bridge that connects the west shore to the east shore. And for some stupid reason, this is, like, an impenetrable, like,
dude, there's, like, barricade. There's class lines. Like, people are like, oh, you're a west shore person?
Oh, you go.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
like,
I don't go across the bridge.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't understand it. Because it's not, there's no toll.
It's not a huge bridge.
It's not a huge bridge. It's, like, it's a pretty nice bridge.
Yeah, I mean, in the world of bridges, I would say it's a pretty standard.
And it holds its own. But it's, like, it's a weird thing that it wasn't in Florida, actually. It's very similar, but the bridge is a little bit longer, And it's St. Petersburg and Tampa have this weird thing where it's a very east shore, west shore
right,
deal. Like
right. So I'm sure this is not, and as you had pointed out, not unique to other areas, right. But there's always some sort of like man-made or natural barrier that keeps like people separated from each other. Nonetheless, this is still Team 3G. It's still third generation Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's the same people that brought you West Shore.
That's right, yeah.
And York Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Judo.
And all the other ones. Harleysville.
Yeah, well, no, because, oh. I mean, these partners, these folks are actual, the owners of, like, the West Shore gym, the York gym, and then we've migrated to the East Shore, and they've added me as a partner in that endeavor. And so now I am a gym owner on the East Shore, and it was trying. Let me tell you, we had accidentally found the spot, and I love to tell the story because it's a great one, and that is... And I'm sure everybody that's ever had to deal with, a real estate agent that's out of town, right? You're not working with a local person because you're in commercial construction and commercial buying.
Right.
A lot of times the people that own the property are from another state or, you know, somewhere else in the, you know, or just not nearby.
Yeah.
So ours was no different where we had a somebody that was looking for properties for us in the area that wasn't necessarily connected to meeting us in person. And we'd looked at some spots and trust me guys, when I tell you, this has been in the works for a couple of years. It hasn't been like, it wasn't just the year that we did this. We've been looking at spots and trying to determine where we're going to go.
What are ideal, in particular, I guess in your eyes, you were probably looking for something in particular,
I mean, exactly what we found is what we were looking for. So, I mean, and I'll describe it, and you can hop on our website and see the space. It's a gigantic space. It's more mat space than I've ever seen in my jiu-jitsu life.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and we were really looking for something that was simple, that was open, that was flat, you know, that had nothing but space and opportunity for us to build a very simple structure, guys. I mean, if anyone's ever been in a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym, which many of you have, you appreciate that it's mats, changing room, bathroom.
Yeah, yeah. You really only need like four doors in a jiu-jitsu.
That's
gym,
right.
There's, I think really total.
Right, right, right. That's it. And so it's not a complicated structure by any means. But we were just struggling with finding a space. But one day we were sent out to go look at another place, and we were given the wrong address, and we couldn't find what they were looking for. And it was in a strip mall type of environment. And there were a couple of open spots in there, and they were all tiny. So it was like, this couldn't be the right place. And one of my partners, David Brogan, found an empty lot or an empty space, excuse me, that was next to a Dollar General. And from the outside, it looks like it's a tiny sliver of a place. And it was all covered up. The windows, you couldn't see in it. But the door in the back was open. And I assume it just meant come on in.
Yeah, yeah.
So he went on in there, and it was dark, and of course, and it smelled like cat piss, and there had been squatters in there. Anyway, this space was glorious.
Yeah, yeah.
It was perfect. It was complete. It was actually the second half of what the Dollar General now occupied. It used to be a grocery store, so it was a huge place.
Right.
And they had divided it, and the Dollar General had this one side, and the other side had been left empty for almost 10 years. And the real estate agent and then the owner of the property was like, yeah, if you want to take a look at it, we'll give you a good deal on it. And they sure did. And then we started the construction process.
And then.
And so everything from, like, we did everything. So everything from design to build and everything else, instituted by us. Like, we did that. We didn't just hand it off to somebody to do it. The construction part was done with a contractor. And again, it was like, you know, I learned a lot, Pat, let me tell you, especially in terms of, it's not my first business that I've opened, but it's the first business that I've opened that required construction and management of those types of things. And when you guys are on a budget, you do a lot of this stuff yourself, right?
Yeah.
And it was really like, I cannot tell you how many times in the last year I moved mats.
Yeah, I remember the saga of, because I remember when you announced the mats were in.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, can anybody, who can help out with the mats? Then we found out the saga with the mats and how they were acquired and who they were acquired from and the person you're dealing with and the companies and all this other stuff. And And just that one particular, and that's the thing is, if you think, look at every aspect of the gym and you have to go like, all right, well, the walls are white. Well, somebody had to decide. Somebody had to pick paint. Somebody had to buy paint. Somebody had to put the paint on. Like, all this, each thing has 15 different steps to it. And I remember when I thought when the mats came in, I was like, oh, good, the gym's about to be open.
Right. Wrong.
It's like it was crazy because it just feels like everything is. And I will say, I know I'm not the first to say it. I want to congratulate you.
Well, thank you.
On all and everyone involved with all the hard work that was put into this.
Lots of hard work.
All the decisions made, I feel like, were correct ones because it looks great.
Did our best.
It's a great, fun place to train. It doesn't feel like something that was turned into a jiu-jitsu gym. As soon as you walk in, it feels like, oh, yeah, that's...
It's a jiu-jitsu gym.
This has always been
here. Yeah, I like that. Good, thanks. So, that's a huge compliment. Yeah.
Everything was meticulously thought of, and I think it paid off.
Yeah,
It took a long time, but I can't imagine... it's like opening a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's this weird thing. You got to think of the forks. You got to think of the napkins. You got to think of the plates.
And I'll tell you this, another thing too, and this is interesting. First of all, I thank you for the compliment. And a shout out to everybody that helped out with that. My partners, everybody did like a lot of work to get this thing rocking and rolling. And again, surprisingly, it's an extraordinarily simple structure. And for some reason, I mean, excuse me, and also one of the biggest, the stickiest part of all this is when you're working within a township and you have to get permitting.
Yeah, permits.
Permits took forever. I mean, forever. And it was amazing. Like just to be a part of that process was very frustrating, and infuriating. And also then we had a lot of compliances that we had to maintain and manage because we're opening a new space, and much of which has nothing to do with anybody. I mean, we have Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighters and mixed martial artists and judo fighters in the gym, and that's it. I mean, that's the only thing that we offer in that space. But anyway, all that being said, you know, compliance was an issue and so on and so forth. But shout out to everybody that helped, because we had so many people help and come in and like and donate their time, effort, and energy, and it was really, really appreciated. And that gym is for you guys. I mean, but here's the thing. When you say restaurant, nobody opens up a restaurant to make money, right?
Yeah, it's your passion.
Guess what, guys? Nobody opens a jiu-jitsu gym to make money either. So like, I mean, these opportunities seem like, I mean, and don't get me wrong, like my partners have established a gym in on the West Shore of Harrisburg that is doing very well, and York as well, doing very well. And yeah, and that's after like 10 years, you know? But nobody opens it with the intent of like becoming rich or making a lot of money. I mean, we're in a great position where our student base is growing, bills are covered, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. That to me, a successful business or a successful gym or any whatever it may be, whether it's your because I've started a production and direction company with Baby Mermaid. We were talking about that earlier, Baby Mermaid Productions and stuff like that. So like it's it doesn't feel like a business for like the long. It doesn't feel like it. It just feels like something you're doing for the longest time. And I have to assume that's kind of. I feel like it's very much in line with like a career. It's
well,
like,
it would be, right?
It is. It literally is. Yeah. I mean, I know that, but like it's like you. It's like you, like, what's the blazing your own trail?
Yeah.
In a career path.
Right.
Like you're making a career path for yourself. You're saying, I want a career in this thing, so I'm just going to open the thing and I'm going to do the thing.
Right.
And that's ultimately, I think, where a lot of successful businesses come from, and successful inventions. And as somebody that looks practically at life and says, you know what? I'll fucking do it. And I appreciate that, because no matter what, you say like, oh, it's not, you know, it won't be profitable. It doesn't. It's profitable right now because it's open.
Yeah, it provides what we wanted it to provide.
And it brings you exactly what you wanted.
Exactly. And it is a dream come true from that perspective. Like, and I agree with you, man. We've said this before on the podcast, and I'll say it again. I'll brag just a little bit. Having opened successful businesses in the past, it is, guys, nothing more than consistency over time.
Yeah.
You blaze the trail, you lay the groundwork, and you don't wait. You just get started.
Yeah.
And I remember, I've told this story before, but it never ceases to amaze that. I remember one time after I'd started my design studio, and it had been years after that, and we'd been, of course, making a living and doing all the things that we wanted to do as a family, and I remember sitting down in frustration next to my wife saying, when am I going to make it?
Yeah.
And she looked at me and said, what do you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
We've already made it. And I was like, oh, yeah, no shit. Like, we're making a living out of doing this.
That's the best part. Wives are totally perfect for that one thing is to like.
Well, they happen to be perfect for a lot of things.
Yeah, you're right. I know, but you know,
but this one thing.
This one thing in particular, I feel like it's. It's wives in particular. Your friends can say it, your peers, anybody. But right. It's that thing of like, because they're the person that you feel most comfortable being vulnerable with.
Sure, of course.
So you'll go.
Or should be.
Yeah. Well, one of them. I feel like you should be more vulnerable in, not with everybody, but with your friends, males included. You should cry more, pussies. but I feel like there's a interesting thing with like wives that where they kind of see the thing of. It's also they're invested in you too.
100%.
So like you saying that is them going like, "No, idiot. Yeah. I can see you're successful and I think you're successful."
Right.
So like you should think that way a little bit because you have to hear other people's perspective and a wife's perspective when it comes to, especially to this, careers and things.
Sure.
Is so beneficial.
And also, I will tell you that my wife is my, she runs all the business operations too. So it was very much like an you idiot because she's like, I have no idea. She runs all the finances, does the taxes and pays the bills.
Worried. If
she's
I'm not worried, you should be fine.
Exactly right. She's like, I take care of this every month.
You're
so,
the artist, dork.
Just go art.
Quit being a pussy.
Shut up.
Yeah. It's like, it's literally like, cause I'll go like, oh, you know, I'm not on this show. They didn't ask me to be on that show. And it's like, she's like, do you want to be on that show? And I'm like, no.
Right.
Like, then what are you doing? But
So shout out to my wife and Pat's wife for putting up with the perpetual man cold.
Yeah.
That is like.
For being with our whiny little artist complaints. Going, I don't feel fulfilled. Shut up. And they're sweating and doing stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of being fulfilled, I mean, there we have it, guys. We have this glorious facility, and it's open, and it's for you guys. I mean, that's so come train. Like it is
a couple of competitions there.
We've had competitions. We've had seminars. Mm-hmm. We have classes 7 days a week, starting at 6 o'clock in the morning. Shout out 6 a.m. And that's right. And you know, like it's incredible. It's 8,000 square feet, right? And you know. I don't know how many, like 6,000 of it is mats.
Yeah, really. It's so crazy because it's almost, have you ever seen like, I guess I was going to say, have you ever seen those rooms from the 70s? You know, the sunken in room that's like almost all pillows.
You mean the sex chalet?
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know, like a sex bungalow.
So that's Harrisburg East.
It's a jiu-jitsu bungalow.
It's a,
you can just walk in, throw your shoes off and dive into a mat. Don't dive. Cause actually they still
don't.
Hurt.
Yeah. Don't do that.
They're still fresh mats.
Yeah. I mean, it's just an expansion of like what we were already offering on the West Shore. We have a great team of black belts and great practitioners throughout the talent skill. And we can get into this because we just got back from the third annual King of the White Belts tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
And which Pat and I were fortunate enough to be able to commentate on. And just as like the past years, but maybe even more so this year, as we watch even jiu-jitsu grow in that small amount of time, and the amount of growth that I've seen in jiu-jitsu and the skill level with white belts in particular, in the 16 years that I've been doing jiu-jitsu, this, like, it's incredible, guys. So we run this, so for our listeners, we run this tournament every year. It's an annual tournament, and it's called King of the White Belts, and it's an in-house type of thing. So it's all of our affiliates and our locations that are able to participate, and you bring the best of your best white belts who compete against each other in three different weight classes. And in the end, the winner of each weight division gets awarded their blue belt if they make it to the, you know, to win their division. And it's just run like any other tournament. It's under IBJJF rules. Mm-hmm. It's very well run and professional and so forth. And Pat and I are your...
That's very professional. That's, we aren't.
No, we maintain our status as knuckleheads.
We are very consistent in our knuckleheadism.
Yeah. And so, but to be able to commentate that, but to watch these matches, it was incredible. The skill level just in like brand new people who... And I say brand new. There are definitely those that are like... were already ready for their blue belts. Yeah. And I think that's kind of the point though, right? King of the White Belts says, you know, the people that are due for their blue belt anyway are going to likely win their division. Mm-hmm. It was ready for their blue belt, right? Yeah. I mean, and so it does work out in that, you know,
but
kind
it makes
of that
it
sphere.
More, it makes it more interesting in the sense that like, it's not like, yeah, sure. You, we all know you should, but you're not at the requirements. But if you can conquer this gauntlet, sure. of people. And that's the thing, is you have different skill levels as well. You have a no-stripe white belt that was a wrestler. That is, you know, or a previous grappling experience.
Yeah,
some maybe, way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We like only that. Avoid, we only, if you're D1, you're not allowed to.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah, yeah. Right. But I'm saying, like, but within reason. Or they have grappling experience, or they maybe they trained at a different gym and they moved here.
It
could be any scenario. And that's also another thing. I mean, last year, Randy took one of the one of his division.
You're right.
Randy is a former 6 a.m. trainee. Or once a 6 a.m. or always a 6 a.m.
Thank you, Pat.
But he is somebody that moved away to Ohio.
Ugh. Talk about a barrier.
You know what I mean? But Randy was somebody who was ready for his blue belt. Like he was ready for his blue belt. Like as far as like he was determined to get his blue belt.
Well, right. And that's the coolest part about it, right? I mean, and then like anything else, I mean, these are, and just like every other belt promotion, whether you get it through a tournament in this particular case or you get it because you make it, then you grow into that position, right?
And that's another, and I think that's the coolest part is you don't really lose. Like, you gain competition experience. A lot of times at white belt, maybe you haven't competed a ton. I know I hadn't.
Yeah.
That's the first time. I got my first experience at an in-house tournament.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much value in the fact that you can gain competition experience, get over that, get over those nerves, and also you're more comfortable in this environment competing with people that you've competed with before, but you also get the long having to wait for a match.
Sure.
Oh, this one went a little bit longer. Oh, this, you got this foul. You learn about fouls. You learn about DQs. You learn about all these other
things. In a pretty safe environment, right?
In a very, and where you're, because that's the thing, is the nerves in going to a competition, a lot of times, it's not the jiu-jitsu, it's the everybody's watching you.
Yeah,
it's you. It, when you're at class, everybody's rolling.
You're more worried about embarrassing yourself in front of others than you are like you're, and that is
And these people you've embarrassed yourself in front of a million times.
Let me tell our audience that everybody that competed at the King of the White Belts tournament should not be embarrassed because nobody put on a bad performance.
No,
everybody did really, really well.
Nobody,
and so that was a hard earned victory for those that won their division.
And we brought it up a couple times. And I want to give a shout out to anybody that's watching that maybe doesn't train jiu-jitsu that watched the thing, because I got a lot of feedback from people that were like just comics or other people that I didn't expect. They were like, "Hey, I watched your thing.
Watched tournament.
That was really funny."
And here we go, though.
What?
I mean, this is and where we start getting to like the state of like jiu-jitsu today and like all this stuff. It is so much more accessible for in a variety of different ways that it's rare that we run into somebody that A, hasn't done some jiu-jitsu before, or B, knows about jiu-jitsu, like understands the fundamental principles of jiu-jitsu.
Right.
That it's a submission grappling art. You know, they've seen it in context to professional fighting and, you know, mixed martial arts. They've seen it on television. They've heard about it on podcasts. A lot, so many. This is the thing that cracks me up, Pat, is that all of these people that are like that follow podcasting and love, like, you know, love their heroes, whether it's Rogan or whether it's, you know, Jocko or whether it's I mean, the list goes on and on and on. All these guys train or black belts in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they talk about jiu-jitsu all the time as though, and it's not even a jiu-jitsu podcast.
Yeah.
It's just a, you know, and it's fascinating to me, like now, like, and then on the end of like celebrity, you know, we've got all these celebrities that are training jiu-jitsu. It's just like, I mean, it's the shit, guys.
Yeah.
And it's great, though. It makes it super accessible. People know about it.
It's also the thing that we were talking about when you don't realize you're accomplishing the thing that you wanted to.
Right.
I wanted to be somebody who is like, I'm not here to push jiu-jitsu on anybody. I don't give a shit. Like, if you don't want to do it, I don't give a fuck. I just think it's the best martial art. I love training it.
Right.
So if somebody ends up liking me and ends up checking out jiu-jitsu because of me or because I do it or I suggested it or something like that, that's the ultimate compliment in my opinion, because that's somebody trusting your opinion and then also getting an introduction to it one way or another, whether it be training, watching a competition and being like, oh, that's pretty funny. It can be fun.
Sure.
Like, oh, look, it's not. And you're not necessarily going to get that at every gym. Not every gym thinks it's fun to joke
or
around
funny.
And tickle. But I do. So if you want to have some fun, come train with me.
It is inherently fun.
Yeah.
I mean, like, whether you're getting rolled up or, you know, tickled by Pat. I mean, there are varying degrees of like seriousness. For me, it's always serious fun. Like or I wouldn't do it for this long, right? It's something that is rewarding in ways that you can't describe until you do it. But understanding that, like, it is by nature just fun. It's fun to roll with people. It's fun to learn new skills. It's fun to learn that you're capable of doing things that you did not know you were capable of.
Right.
And it's really fun to add a sense of reality to your current, like, for me, and I think for a lot, and I can't speak for women, but I can speak for men on the most part, is that most of us feel like we know how to defend ourselves or how to fight until we find people that know how to fight.
Yeah.
And then you're like, ooh, shit. Like,
oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, that was fun. Like, I don't know why, but that always cracks me up. And even to this day, like, even as a black belt, when I've got somebody who's super skilled, and it doesn't matter whether they're a white belt or a blue belt or another black belt, when they like tie me up in a pretzel or do something that I hadn't seen before, it cracks me up.
It was today. I was laughing the whole time when we were rolling. I was like,
yeah, but that was me doing it to you, though.
Yeah. Well, I still thought it was funny. So I agree. Yeah, but yeah.
It's hilarious.
It's one of those situations where you're like, oh, shit, I'm doomed.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? Doomed, like,
there's,
right.
There's nothing I can do.
Exactly.
And I know I'm not in danger because I'm not rolling. Like, what are you? You're the captain.
Right.
You know what I mean? This is all Captain Phillips here.
Yeah.
You're the captain. Now.
Right.
You can do whatever you want. I'm just here to have. I'm here to learn.
Two things I want to point out because you said it. Okay. And the first one is because it's the closest one to what you just said was that, you know, you're most comfortable when it's somebody that is outskilling you, right? Like when you're in that position. But here's the thing. Just like we said with the King of the Wipeout tournament, there's so much skill on the mat right now that like it's hard. It's hard not to be in some, whatever scenario you're in, to be outskilled in one portion of jiu-jitsu or not. Like, I mean, or another, I mean. I would say whether it's passing, whether it's from your feet, whether it's from, you know, some guard. Like, and I mean, in any variation of those guards, whether you're in the gi or no gi, because that's something else that we've done is in the past couple of years, we've brought back no gi as part of a core curriculum in our gym. Mm-hmm. We did have no gi for a while, and then our no-gi instructor had left or our primary no-gi instructor. And so we kind of just filled that gap with gi training. And then we brought that back here recently. And we have several no-gi classes that take place every week. And I teach most of them. But we have a great one on Saturday morning as well. And the thing is that like it changes the dynamic. And then there are people that really thrive in the no-gi environment. And then there are people that thrive a lot in the gi environment. Yeah. And then when we mix them all together, which is what I'm trying to do now, is that you guys just thrive in all environments. But it's just fascinating to see you're always in danger.
Yeah.
Like every time I roll with you animals, I'm in danger of something.
Yeah.
You know, and it's great. But the other thing, too, is that you had mentioned this a couple of minutes back, and it was really, really cool. And that is essentially what you said is if you like it, then what else is there? And are you familiar with Rick Rubin, producer, music producer?
Yeah, okay.
That's something that he says.
He's a Zen dude.
He is, you guys, if you don't know, if you're not familiar with Rick Rubin, you should take some time to listen to his, he's been doing a lot of podcasts lately, like interviews and so forth,
really?
Talking about his process.
I didn't know that.
He just put out a book in January. I have not ordered it yet. I want to get it. It's on creativity. And he shares a lot of the same ideas that I have about creativity and so forth. So, like, in some ways, it's very serendipitous and it's simpatico. Like, we think a lot alike. But one of the things that he says is, because they're asking him about his process and how he makes all these, like, all this phenomenal music or how he produces all this. And he's like, his only measure is whether he likes it or not.
Yeah.
If he likes it, then he feels good about that. Excuse me. And if he doesn't like it, then that's okay.
And like, at this point, like he and that's the thing is I is trusting the process. Like,
yeah, you, trust it. Yeah,
like, try it. Like this is not the best contribution to that to the Rick Rubin talk because he's such a prolific dude.
Yeah,
but I always thought I wanted to be a painter. I always thought I wanted to paint. And I kept saying how much I want to paint and how much I want to take a class and how much I want to do it and how much I want to do it. And I've walked past art supply stores. I've walked past the aisle. Oh, look at that. There's a. I figured out, Jeff, I don't want to paint.
Right.
I admire painters.
Yeah, you admire them.
And
right.
That's okay.
That is good.
That's something that I admire and I see people do. I love paintings.
Yeah, you love
and
them,
and I love the fact that they. I when I see a piece of art and it makes me feel something or it moves me in one way or another.
Sure.
And I trust that instinct. And when I buy that painting and I hang it up, people come over the house and they go, "What the fuck? That's a great fucking painting."
Right.
That's the same idea. It's that it's your. He's simply curating creativity. What he does is he comes in and he says, yeah, like what they say, what do you think sounds best? Like, if I'm doing it, I think this one sounds the best. But which one feels the best?
Right.
Try that one again and try to do it this way. Like,
yeah.
His way of production is exactly the way I would produce as well, because I hate being a session musician, and that's what,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't want to be the guy that's like, let me do it. Like, no, they're the artist. Like, he's somebody who is he looks like a biker, but he sounds like a hippie.
Yeah, we'll do an entire episode on Rick Rubin sometime, because it's totally worth it, and I don't want to turn this episode into that, but you're exactly right, and a lot of things that you've even said today echo the things that he says, and you're right, you should create an environment in which people can express themselves, and that is exactly how I want to approach jiu-jitsu. It's how I approach my work.
It's what you've done.
And it's what I've done.
You've done it. Yeah. You've already succeeded. Yeah.
Thank you, wife.
You created it. You fucking idiot.
Yeah, and that's, so like, a lot of that resonates really, really well with me. So, like, yeah, and you're right. You're exactly right. That is the place that you want to be. So, speaking of which, the world of jiu-jitsu. We're going to be back to podcasting earlier, but I got sick.
Oh, yeah.
And in that time period, you motherfuckers lit Canada on fire. I don't know what happened. The world's on fire. I was out for a week. Like,
yeah, I feel like the issue with Canada is its similarity to Australia, with there being so much unpopulated area, wilderness and whatnot.
Oh, so the solution is to populate it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, construction.
I'm just saying, if I'm saying it, I feel like, and I'm not, I honestly, I don't know, I don't think I'm conservative, I don't think I'm liberal, I don't know what the fuck I am necessarily.
Yeah.
But I just feel like if there's places where there's like too many people, or if they want to not be there anymore, and then you got like literally a ton of land that nobody's using.
Yeah.
Help them out.
I mean, like, the cities burn a lot less than forests.
Right? So if you say, hey, everybody here, or why don't you move up here to Saskatchewan and, you know, like,
right.
You earn it. You get it. You know
get a free bag of milk.
Yeah, you get a bag of milk, son. Hey there. But it's the same idea as Australia. Like, oh, it's so inhabitable. Is it really? Like, I mean, I'm sure you could have it.
I mean, we've seen some pretty inhabitable places.
Yeah.
And then be habitated.
You're saying the only place that people can live is the beach? Fuck off. Go inside. Go in there a little bit. You're scared of snakes? They're your snakes.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's plenty, but you're right. Yeah, we accidentally lit a doob and threw it out in the woods.
Next thing you know.
Oops.
Next thing you know.
And it's Quebec, even.
Yeah.
The French fires. That's why nobody wants to help them.
They're just like, no thanks.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, so yeah. So jiu-jitsu today. is the gi dead?
Oh.
Is the gi dead, Pat?
Well,
and I'll bring this topic up because this is, as our camera goes out.
Son of a bitch.
Cat problems again.
He loves gi jiu-jitsu, that's why.
And I've seen this quite a few times here recently, is that, you know, I understand that it's incendiary and that's why it comes up. But like, the question is, like, right now the popularity in not only doing jiu-jitsu, but also viewing jiu-jitsu is in the no-gi world. There's a lot that's attractive to people. Maybe it's because of its accessibility. Maybe it's because they've never really like dove into the gi. But the question becomes, is gi jiu-jitsu dying?
The point I was going to say was before I had to reprimand Stanley was the most popular jiu-jitsu practitioner in the world exclusively does no gi jiu-jitsu. Gordon Ryan.
Right. But he doesn't, though. I mean, he competes in no-gi.
He only does. Look, I have never seen that man in a gi. Also, I only Google Gordon Ryan shirtless, so that might be me. But I have never seen him train or compete in a gi.
Right.
So it's if he is the Pied Piper of jiu-jitsu, if he's the one that's out there kind of representing it for a lot of people, I feel like he has somewhat of a responsibility to fucking slap a gi on, because that's, if anything, that's where it started, man. Come on.
It is.
So I don't know if it's dead, but the people in which, like, but there's people like Mikey Musumeci.
Mm-hmm.
There's people
one of
like,
my favorites. I love him.
Fucking Langacker.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Fucking Langacker.
I can't remember his first name. Fucking Langacker. There's the Rotolo. Well, do the Rotolos do?
They do both. They both do both.
So like, I feel like they're still, but those aren't the names. Like if I feel like it is not dead, but it may be dying. Because of the fact that of that.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, then I'm bringing it back.
Okay.
Okay. Because here's the thing.
You and Zuck, huh?
Yeah.
Zuckerberg.
Yeah. I mean, wait till I see that motherfucker on the mat.
I can't wait.
So, the thing is here's what we miss about like about the gi, and that is that it the gi is designed as a tool. The gi is a tool. It is to simulate clothing that somebody would be wearing on the street, whether that's a hooded sweatshirt or a jacket or a t-shirt even.
Yeah.
And these things, or pants, you know, because lots of people wear pants. Not everybody.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
But the whole point of the gi is that, and the reason it is so like it is so durable, so thick and heavy and so forth, is because you use it as a training tool. You don't want to have to go. You're not going to go through.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you're not going to wear a sweatshirt every time you go to have it torn up and then have to go buy a new sweatshirt. You have a gi. The gi can be washed and reused, and you can practice with that tool. But it's a tool, guys. It's still jujitsu. It's jujitsu. Like. It's not because you have to wear a gi or a traditional uniform to go out into the world and do jujitsu.
Now, Jeff, here we go, right? If I may play a little devil's advocate,
You may.
Is it maybe part of the reason that gi jujitsu is failing, dying, dead, whatever, is because of the price of gis? Is the no-gi just a little bit easier because all you need is just a shirt and shorts that don't have pockets? That don't have pockets?
No pockets.
Guys, remember that part. It's very important.
Okay, well, and then I will see your devil's advocate and raise you one fuck you, and here it goes.
Fuck you, devil.
And that is, here's the thing, is that most of these people are spending way more than that on clothing that's going to disintegrate within the next, or you're going to stop wearing within the next year.
Okay.
And the gi, like, that thing will last you quite a while. I mean, depending on how much you're training and so on and so forth, but realistically, like, I still have my very first gi, and it is tattered.
Yeah.
But I still have it.
Yeah, you and Galeno got me that gray one. I still wear it.
Yeah. I mean, and so that's been years. I mean, and that's, so, I mean, and if you get a, and if you get a bunch of gi, and there's lots of gi sales and so forth. And yes, I agree with you. There are gis that are very expensive. Like, you can spend upwards of $250 on a gi. I don't. That's not my preference. I usually go with like a gi that costs about $100.
There are accessible ones. There's good ones that you can get for like $60 to $70.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. Ones, yeah, absolutely. And if you get a couple of them, because you're going to train a lot, and believe me, you start jujitsu, you're going to train a lot because you love it. You're going to fall in love with it. And you're going to train all the time.
You're going to want more gis.
You're going to want more gis, but you only want more gis so that you can cycle through those gis and they last longer.
Right.
I mean, but realistically, you think about the investment that you're making. It's nominal compared to like the stupid shit you normally buy.
Right.
And I mean that to everybody, including myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Wasted within a...
The things that I'll spend, like, I'll be like, I'll never spend $300 on that. But in that month, I'll have spent $300 on fast food.
Right.
It's like, what are you doing,
exactly,
man? You idiot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think, like, you know, I think the question of whether the gi is dead, and I mean, it could be that it's dying. It could be that there are, and I don't know statistically if there are more practitioners that are doing no gi jujitsu versus gi jujitsu, but we've seen this ebb and flow before, especially when, you know, when Eddie Bravo started 10th Planet and he was like exclusively no gi, and we saw the popularity in the gi drop and no gi go up, but then it leveled back out again, and it'll continue to ebb and flow. But just remember that if you're somebody that's like, I hate the gi, then essentially you just hate wearing clothes.
You don't like jujitsu.
You don't like jujitsu, right?
Yeah. I wonder if because there's no belts, really.
Right.
There's ranks, right? Like, do they have...
Sure, I mean, you can still get belted in no-gi jiu-jitsu, but it's...
just take it off and throw it off.
Right, right. You don't ever wear it. Right.
So if a black belt ends up getting submitted by somebody else, or of a brown belt, you know, I wonder if there's a little ego preservation in there, maybe, or...
So the way the world looks at no-gi jiu-jitsu is more akin to whether you are a beginner, a novice, or an expert. right? Because then, because there are a lot of like, there are a lot of different factors that play into, you know, how you compete in no-gi. And because it is a different, there are different skill sets and levels of skill sets within no-gi that doesn't exist in the gi, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Because you could take somebody that's practiced no-gi their entire, you know, jiu-jitsu career, and they could be a black belt, put them in a gi, and then all of a sudden they're like a fish out of water.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, in my estimation, and to our point earlier when we were starting with what, you know, the world of jiu-jitsu, is that, you know, Gordon does wear a gi. I've seen him wear a gi. I've seen him train in a gi. He competes exclusively in no-gi, but he has worn a gi. And you're going to look it up. Go for it.
I believe you.
Yeah. Yeah. So at any rate, all that being said is that if you want to be, if you want to be a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you should be a black belt in the gi. Well,
covers up his
I
heads.
I mean, how many fucking pictures of Gordon Ryan?
Some
in
of these
a gi
are doubles. Some of these are doubles.
Oh, are they? Because he's wearing a different gi and all
of them. Oh, he's got gi and glasses on here.
Yeah.
So is he? So let's. So this is might be a dumb question. Hey, get ready for it. It's the first one. Of the new
ask a black belt. We're not in that section.
We're
yet.
Not there yet. This is just a dumb question section. But if you are a black belt in no gi, are you also a black belt in gi automatically? Because like you just said,
I mean,
you know what I mean.
I mean, not in my opinion. Not in my opinion. My opinion is, like, I mean, you may be an expert in that in no-gi jiu-jitsu. You may be a black belt in no-gi jiu-jitsu, and that's fair to say. Like,
right.
you can definitely do that. Because just like everything else, there's levels and skill sets to both. But if you want to be a well-rounded Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter...
It would work better the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you were a black belt in gi, and then you went to no-gi, you're going to be way more, I feel like, more fit, don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, that would be really opinion-based. But
That's why we need both.
Yeah, I think you should have both. So it solves that problem. It solves the quandary in the disruption in the force, if you will.
This is why. It makes him look fat. Sorry. That's why I figured it out.
Yeah.
It makes Gordon Ryan look fat.
And so he's like, no, I'm not wearing this fucking thing. But yeah, look, listen, you should focus if you can. And not everybody has access to both gi and no gi jiu-jitsu, and that's reasonable and that's fine. I just think that you should do your best to be a black belt in both gi and no gi jiu-jitsu. You should. And I don't say like, I think it's, To qualify that statement, I don't think that you need to go and compete at black belt levels at both gi and no gi jiu-jitsu. In fact, I think that for many practitioners, you don't have to compete at all. That's not necessarily your objective.
Yeah.
And I'm saying you need to be familiar with the mechanics and understanding of like no gi jiu-jitsu and gi jiu-jitsu. Like, you don't have to be the greatest, you know, athlete in both to deserve your black belt, but you should understand how no-gi jiu-jitsu works as a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Makes sense?
That's sensible. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think so. It may not be your preference. You may not like to practice it. I know black belts that I'm very close to that don't practice no-gi jiu-jitsu. That's just not their jam. But I guarantee you they understand the mechanics of no-gi jiu-jitsu and how it functions.
Just like if I may, Jeff, I'm going to help make your point even better. You've made a great point, not only that, but also excellent argument for both, but definitely for gi.
Yeah.
Right? Like you were saying at the beginning.
And I love both, by the way.
Yeah. It's to simulate when you're wearing clothes.
Right.
You don't think you're ever going to get a fight at the beach? You don't think you're ever going to fight somebody at a public pool? Have you ever been to a public pool?
This is exactly why I stay out of public pools.
That's why you need no-gi jiu-jitsu, because you're going to be slippery and you're going to be in a bathing suit.
That's right. And it's going to be some middle-aged mom that you're
Yeah. But you need to know how to Kimura her effectively.
You need to know how to put her to sleep.
Until the lifeguard comes over.
That's right. And you got to put him to sleep then.
You're going to do something about this? Going to do something? Like Matt Serra at that Vegas buffet or whatever.
I was just thinking about that.
It's a security guard comes over, he's like, you're gonna do something. The cops come over and he's just like, hey, are you gonna arrest him? Like, he's like talking to him, he's in flip-flops. Dude, two biggest fears of mine are until I started jiu-jitsu, what was getting into a fight in flip-flops.
Okay.
I was nervous about that, but both no gi and gi, you do barefoot.
Yeah.
So kick those puppies off, you're good to go.
Ready to rock and roll.
So it's one of those things of like, oh, I'm excited when I wear flip-flops. I might get to fight somebody today.
Right,
I'm
right.
In my fight mode. I got active toes.
Sorry about
that. But My next biggest fear is to die at work. I never want to die at work.
Right.
That would be awful.
It would be awful. Yeah. Except for me, because that is my dream. My work is jiu-jitsu. So. <You're right. laughs>
Died literally doing what he loved.
That's right. But yeah, so anyway, to end this segment and move on, I think you guys should do your best to like be in a place where you can train both gi and no gi jiu-jitsu. Again, I'm not if you get your black belt in a gi and that's how you trained, you should explore no gi. Yeah. You should understand it, and that will make you a more well-rounded black belt. To me, that's important. If you got your black belt as a no gi practitioner, put a fucking gi on.
Yeah, come on.
Try it out. Yeah. Like, and then understand the mechanics of gi jiu-jitsu and like how it functions. That makes you a well-rounded black belt.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just like we all take this time to understand wrestling, we understand the mechanics of judo, we understand the mechanics of sambo, we understand the mechanics. There's lots of different like things, and just like, and also not forgetting too that we should all understand, as Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioners, we should understand how strikes are thrown. We should understand these things, not because we're experts at striking, but because we understand the mechanics of how a strike is thrown.
I understand now.
And how to block it.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's a big, defense is the biggest thing too. By taking a couple weeks, actually a couple months of MMA classes, learning the fundamentals of striking, blocking, where your footwork, stuff like that.
Right, right. Distance management. Yeah. Yeah, all these things are super important.
It's one of those things that it's definitely stopped those nightmares I used to have where I go to throw a punch and it felt like I was punching through water.
I had those. Like, oh, yeah. It's the worst.
Like, what the fuck? Like, I was just fighting you and I was like, oh, my arm's really tired right now. I don't know why. It's because I didn't know. It was a fear. It's a fear you have. So once you know how to do it, that's the thing. Is once you learn how to fight, it's one of my favorite quotes. It's actually down in the bathroom right now. It's a quote I love. You cannot consider yourself a peaceful person unless you're capable of fighting.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So if you, otherwise you're just a fucking pussy. That I added that part.
Well, that was in the quote? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's not part of it. That doesn't fit on the pillow when I'm sewing it. Fucking, I ran out. I just got two S's. Damn it.
Get a Sharpie marker out.
Push it. So what does a well-rounded... What can we do when we experience a well-rounded black belt? We can fight them or we can ask them.
That's right. Ask a black belt.
Anybody listening, anybody watching, anybody available, if our voices are hitting your ears, if your eyes are seeing these lips say it right now, you can DM me anything you want.
You can drop in my DMs.
You can drop in my DMs, whether it be you can email me at babymermaidproductions@gmail.com. You can do the same at the same name and Instagram, Baby Mermaid Productions, or Pat George on Facebook. Most of us are probably friends, I'm sure. But don't send them to the 6 a.m. because I don't want him to see him. These are
secret surprise questions.
So anything you got, anything you want to ask him, doesn't have to be jiu-jitsu related. It can be jiu-jitsu related.
That's right.
But we have an example of a non-jiu-jitsu related.
Because the reality is, and everybody knows this, is that once you get your black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you're automatically an expert in all things.
You are indeed a black belt.
That's right.
Like, that's what you are. You're a professor.
They don't call me professor for nothing.
You're a fucking professor.
That's right.
So... First question is from a listener named Pat.
Oh, Pat. Mm-hmm.
Hi. Shout out, Pat. How you doing? Handsome guy.
Probably.
Love that guy.
Very sexy.
Is it crazy that we don't sweeten coffee with marshmallows more regularly?
Well, I would say yes. I think this is strange that we don't do this. And I'll tell you that I have, in the last several months or so, I have gotten on the creatine train,
creatine,
if you will.
What does that mean?
Choo, choo. I take a creatine. What is creatine?
Yeah.
It is a substance that is typically found.
This is how unhealthy.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
A good example of how unhealthy I am, I took all of my my vitamins by accident all at once, and I threw up.
You're like trying to save time.
Like fish oil. Turmeric. I'm like, too much health. So when you say creatine, my mind...
Your mind automatically goes...
My mind goes, huh? Creatine, what?
So creatine is found in meat and in other products, especially like related to like protein, but it helps develop, it does a variety of things, but there's speculation that it helps with mental cognition. Ooh. It definitely helps with lean muscle mass and then joint health as well. And this is particularly helpful for adults, especially older guys like myself who like over time, you know, start to that curve starts to go down instead of up, right? Because I'm getting older and so forth. And so I was turned on to this. It's just 5 grams a day. It's nothing major. It's a small scoop. And I put it in my protein shake. But all of that to say, getting to the marshmallow question, is that this morning when I made my shake, and I make it with almond milk, vanilla almond milk, bananas, protein powder, creatine, and a banana. And
you eat that before the gym or after?
After. Okay. Yeah, I can't eat before the gym. Yeah, it's I like to fight hungry.
Yeah.
But anyway, today I was like, I didn't have almond milk, and I only had regular milk. Oh. And it's just not as like... I don't know. It's not sweet for me.
Almond milk is, I think, like flavored usually. Do you get the or is
yeah yeah?
Like
I get the vanilla
a little
milk.
Sweetened. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. And it's just like perfect. It's not too sweet. And I've been trying to avoid as much dairy as I'd been, and it's been very helpful in my guts. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So anyway, all that to say is that this morning I was like, I just want it to be a little bit sweeter, and we had some like Cocoa Krispies that were in a container that had been sitting there for like months that nobody's gonna eat. And I just poured it in there, and it made it perfect. And so that was like, there's an artificial sweetener right there. Yeah. And so your question is, why don't we sweeten our
Cocoa Krispies roll?
Yeah, they do roll. Yeah. Why not sweeten it with marshmallows? If I would have thought about it, I should have just thrown
Lucky
some marshmallows.
Charms. Yeah, Lucky Charms.
If Lucky Charms, it would have been perfect. But yeah, we should sweeten our beverages with marshmallows more often, whether it's coffee or tea or whatever. Yeah, hot
sugar?
Beverages seems right.
Yeah, like a hot coffee with a couple of marshmallows in it. Also, by the way, is that how you spell creatine?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's how you spell creatine.
Really?
Yeah.
C-R-E-E-A-T-I-N-E?
No, it's not T-I-N-E.
Damn it.
I think it's T-E-N-E.
Damn, I thought it was crazy. All right, nice. That's two wins.
Yeah.
We do have another listener question. This is an actual another person named Frank. You know Frank.
I do.
What song is a song? Sorry. I wrote this, by the way. This is my transcribing of it. Listen to Notably Relatable. You'll hear me read a lot more.
I'm sure they couldn't wait.
Yeah. What is a song that is overdue for a good cover? So like a good example in his opinion was he thinks Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Wow. And boy, so here's the problem with this question, Frank, and I actually think about this quite often, is that the person doing the it would... So many of the songs that are so good that I would love so much, I never want anybody to fuck with.
Right.
Right? So
right,
I'm like, so really it has to be in that kind of middle of the road where the song was like, you're like, this song had potential and it just didn't like, what for whatever reason in context to like the band or like the time it was released or whatever, just didn't land. And you get another band that's like, I actually love this song and they do it and you're like, man, this song freaking rules.
Yeah. I love how they see it from a little bit of a different perspective. Yeah.
But I will say that like, I couldn't give you a specific, what song would be due for that?
I feel like.
I'd say Ace of Base, I Saw the Sign.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. Good.
No, I'm joking. That wouldn't be good at all.
No, why not? You don't think so?
Maybe it would be though. There are a couple of songs, and in particular, I was thinking about some Queen tracks that would be great under like a sort of like the I want to say the alt country type of vein, like a lot of the new
like pop country,
pop country, but like I'm thinking more along the lines of like the roots folk music that I love so much.
Oh, okay, yeah,
like an Andrew Shepherd or like
singer songwriter,
yeah, singer songwriter stuff. Like to take some of those and like extrapolate it to that sound, I think would be amazing. And I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you did. So I agree. Like either way. And that's one of the things that I really enjoyed. Like, you can take Me First and the Gimme Gimmes as a joke band if you want, but I don't. I think that they're fucking great.
I think I'm pretty sure I have every one of their releases.
I do too.
I have a physical copy for sure, like from when...
I don't have a physical copy of every release, but I do have a couple.
The newer ones, I think I've bought a lot more digital, but you're right. Me First and the Gimme Gimmes is a band that is exclusively a cover band that covers each album is themed usually.
Yeah.
To a specific genre or time period, and that I think is a great example.
Yeah, and now they're a punk rock band, so they make punk rock tunes, right. But and they make it out of all these songs. But like the but a rock and roll song, you know, that has three chords can be played in any style.
Yeah,
and I think for people that can understand like how it can move from one genre to the next and still communicate, maybe in a different way than it did before, is really special.
I was just listening to Whitney Houston, Where Do Broken Hearts Go, because of Me First and the Gimme's version of it.
Yeah.
Me First and the Gimme's yeah. version of that.
Yeah.
Where Do Broken Hearts Go, their version of that, I'm not saying it's better, but they are somebody who I feel like is equipped to cover songs that you had no idea you wanted covered.
Right, that you right, a song that you no idea you wanted to hear.
I think that's the point of this.
Yeah,
that this
exactly.
question is like
there
this is
no.
This
is a really great question, Frank.
Right. This is one.
We could do a whole episode on this question.
But by the way, Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah, great song.
I would love to hear like, I want to hear Marilyn Manson's version of it, but then I also want to hear like Dragon Force. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like I want to hear.
Yeah.
I want to hear different takes to it because that's the thing is no matter what. Artists are artists,
yeah,
and the people that are actually going to take the consideration and actually meticulously say, "I love this song.
Well,
this song is perfect."
I'll give you.
How can I do it justice?
Yeah, and I'll give you a perfect example, and then we can move on. And that is bringing it full circle back to Rick Rubin. That's what he did with Johnny Cash and that Nine Inch Nails song, Hurt. I mean, it's a great song. And I think it made that song so much more accessible to so many more people that were like, this is the most beautiful song that Johnny Cash ever wrote. And then you're like, wait a minute. You're like, Johnny Cash didn't write that song. Trent Reznor did. But those people would have never listened to that song from Nine Inch Nails, right? Yeah. They would have listened to it only from Johnny Cash's perspective. But it changes and it doesn't all at the same time. Like, it's still as melodic and beautiful as a song as it was.
Yeah.
It puts it in a different in a relatable terms because it was sung by a guy who was at the end of his career and was older and you know and was resurgence of his career, but you don't understand what I'm saying, right? Like
his final resurgence.
And final,
like that kind of like his like
end of life. It was though.
Yeah,
it was like
his last
end
breath.
Of, yeah. It was amazing, right? Yeah. It was an amazing choice.
I think honestly, some of his best work.
Yeah.
Some of his best work and most, because when he's like, I gave my wine open, like, it's kind of like, he doesn't sound sad. You know what I mean? I need him that he sounded hurt.
Yeah. Frank, maybe the best question we've gotten.
Hey, pound off in the comments. If you think there's a song, write it down underneath or do whatever. You know, send us, I think this would be a good one.
And if you think Pat's an idiot, just say, Pat, you're an idiot.
Yeah, tell me I'm an idiot. It happens a lot. More than you think. All right, so I think that just leaves us with our last thing. Speaking of music.
Yeah, what's on your turntable, Pat?
My turntable?
Yeah, your turntable.
Oh, man, I have been listening.
We've got like a whole year of music that we have not been caught up on. And, dude, I've had such a glorious experience over this last year with new music.
I've been trying to keep a list. And also, so in that same vein, I actually, our off time, I'd started a couple new podcasts, notably Relatable, a couple other ones, one I'm doing for Dominique as well.
So, yeah, yeah.
Now Brewing Next Leaders podcast, all about leadership and professionalism. I'm not on that one.
Yeah, on purpose.
I'm not on mic for that one. but also a podcast known as Drag the Lake, where a buddy of mine, Andy Malafrina, fellow comic from the New Jersey area, we talk about bands that we loved growing up, or like 2008, 2006-ish area.
Yeah.
Metal, rock, hardcore, to now, punk music, a lot of that stuff.
Thus the name, right? Because I was like, "There's, you know, there's a band called Drag the Lake?"
Yeah. There's also a song, one of our favorite songs is called Drag the Lake, or that's a lyric from it. It's called Floater from Every Time I Die. That's equal. It's one of our favorite songs by them. And we thought that's kind of perfect because we're just kind of going back through a lot of the old music we used to listen to.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, discovering new music, new bands, as well as bands that we never gave a shit about back then.
Yeah.
A band that I've really grown to love lately has been Jesus Piece.
Okay, not familiar.
Jesus Piece is a hardcore band from Philadelphia. I had no idea.
Yeah.
While we're talking about bands that we were getting used to or like loving when we were young or basically what we were already into, this other band kind of snuck in, and it's something that I found online. I ended up going to one of their shows recently, and as I was going to the show, I was like, I'm going to find out a little bit more about them. I've only heard a couple songs from them from like a suggestion from my buddy Andy. And I was like, they're really good. I like them a lot. Found out they're from Philadelphia. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I'm going to go see them in Philly. That's cool. That's hometown guys. I get to the show. I find out it's their record release party.
Okay.
For so this band, this album called So Unknown. And from start to finish, it is one of the most refreshing.
Well, do you mind if I make a note?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's one of the coolest new hardcore albums, hardcore, that has come out in a long time. Not metal, not a lot of frill, nothing. They're not and we talk about this a lot on that show. They're not reinventing the wheel, but they're taking themes and sounds that we're used to and that we love and reinventing them and kind of refreshing a lot of that stuff. And it was great to see them.
Perfect.
I didn't realize how big of a show I was going to, but I would say if you get the chance to see them live, they do not disappoint.
Okay.
As well as that is one of the best albums I've heard in a long time.
Well, outstanding. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of one of the best albums that you've heard in a long time, I have so much new music that I've listened to here recently, and new, and I say new as in like new to me.
Yeah, that's okay. The same. Yeah,
I'm excited. First and foremost, though, I want to start off with like my turn. This is just important for all of our listeners, and that is this, because this is, I've already brought them up before in the past, so it's not what's on my. It's always on my turntable, sort of.
Yeah,
and that is
what's been on.
What's been on? Yeah. De La Soul has won their legal rights to their music, which they had not had up until this past year. One of Plug 2 actually has passed away here recently, so they're down member, but they finally won their legal battle to own the rights of their music. And so when you hop on like things like Spotify or Apple Music and so forth, you can listen to all their fucking records. Wow. And do it, because it supports the band and it gives them or the group, and it gives them royalties that they have not received in whatever it's been, 30 years of making music.
That's crazy. Was it still, it was not available on Spotify?
So on Apple Music, for instance, they only had like two or three records that were available. And, De La Soul has been a pretty prolific group, since like the 80s up until, the late 80s, early 90s up until now. And, they've been making records, and you couldn't fucking listen to them, unless you were, unless you bought the record, which is totally great. But I'm
but
just
like,
saying.
And nowadays, like, you want to be able to be like, oh, yeah. So
well,
I
own the
record
already, right? Like, I own the record, so I don't want to buy it again. But I have it on CD, or I have it on vinyl, or I have it on tape. I have Blown Mind State on cassette tape. I don't have a cassette tape player. So I mean, like, buying it again is not what I'm after necessarily. But now on Apple Music, like, I can listen to it and support, and it's just great to have all that. But what's on my turntable right now is a band that you introduced me to not too long ago, and that's White Reaper.
Oh, yeah!
Guys, listen to fucking White Reaper.
Dude.
It's really, really strange music, because it's nostalgic, and it's new, and it's poppy, and
that's
it's
like
metal,
a,
and it's...
That's like a genre
punk
now.
Rock, and it's all together
in this
mix of music that is like... It's nostalgic in like almost an 80s type of pop kind of like way. Mm-hmm. It's got that groove, but it's all original music. It sounds great. The lyrics are terrific.
Oh yeah.
It's got a vibe that like I just really dig.
It's just great music.
Yeah.
It's just great music, and I love that it's like respecting. It's almost like Cheap Trick meets this.
So the whole thing was is that you had it in a playlist that we were listening to during Guard Passing Day, and I was like, man, who's this band? The song, I really like the song, and you told me it's White Reaper, and then I fell down the rabbit hole, and I was like, Pat, these records, like all of the records are really good.
That's the biggest compliment, in my opinion, is when somebody asks what a song is. Because they want to check it out.
Like, yeah.
That's a cool thing. That's when I know that I've curated a good playlist.
Yeah, it was a good one, man. So, like, anyway, thanks for that tip. And that's, that's what's on my turntable right now. White Reaper.
There's going to be no shortage. I feel like we could just, when we end this episode, we should just re-record a bunch of turntables, because we're going to have to get a bunch out. Just record an all turntable
session. Yeah, that's right.
episode.
We'll start a whole podcast on turntables.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really, like our Rick Rubin episode will have to come out eventually. Yeah. And we also wanted to do that comp episode we talked about.
Well, I'll tell you what, we will do that, and the Rick Rubin episode will be an easy one to segue and connect to jiu-jitsu because it's about the creative process, right? It's about how you see
the
yourself, and how you see yourself in that creative process, and about mindset. There's all kinds of good shit to come out of that. And if you guys get an opportunity, go listen to some interviews that he does about his work and how he thinks, and I think you're going to relate a lot to him, but also you're going to admire like his bravery and sort of his candid nature and like his connection to like the world. He's not like selling anything, and that's the best part about it. He's not selling himself. He's not selling anything. He's just telling you like the way he sees the world, and it's really fucking cool.
That's awesome, man.
So anyway, this does it for like episode one, season 3, 6 a.m. podcast.
Yeah. How do you feel?
I feel great.
Yeah. You ready to do another one?
I am ready.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.